This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 133b, page 516. And we are in that very practical part of the book where we are relating the rays and the planets, both sacred and non-sacred, to the different chakras, first of the human being, but also we can look at them as solar systemic chakras, and chakras within the human kingdom, perhaps, and within the body of manifestation of Sanat Kumara, and even within the body of manifestation of the solar logos, or planetary logos first, and solar logos. There are always rulerships of lesser centers by energies emanating as forces from greater centers. Rulership is an interesting concept because it can relate to that which is superior or that which is inferior. A rulership can act as a reducing valve. The being Mars is a lesser being than the Lord of Aries, but the Lord of Mars is the ruler of Aries and channels, to a degree, the Aresian energy, but not entirely. It rules or determines how much of that greater energy will get through to the lower worlds. So determining the flow is one means of rulership. Let's put that down. Okay. To determine flow is one mode of rulership. To stimulate a lesser from a greater is another mode of rulership. It has to do with domination, impulsion, direction. So, you know, that's a more conventional idea of rulership. The king rules over the nation. The king can determine what will happen in the nation. If the king relates to a particular group in the nation, the king has the superior force. And maybe the king will relate most harmoniously to certain types of groups within the nation and be most impulsive, most dominant, most directing in relation to those lesser but resonant areas. So two modes of rulership. The reducing valve, determining the flow, and the one who stimulates, pushes, directs, moves from a superior position. The foundation for the new astrology is already laid. Isn't it amazing that a Tibetan monk, master, abbot, director of a major monastery is here in the West expanding upon the great science of astrology in rather Western terms. Of course, he had two European incarnations, he said. And were they, how did he put it? Let me look here, because did he say that they were important or significant or just that they were European? One of them apparently was as Cleinias, the just Greek, and assistant to Pythagoras, closest assistant to Pythagoras, European. Well, I don't know how well I'm doing there. He said that there were two European incarnations. European lives or incarnations? Well, I'm going to have trouble finding this. I thought I could find it easily, but it's not going to be so. Anyway, maybe just take my word for it. I guess there's nothing else to do right at this moment. Oh, it's Western. Okay. There we go. And this is from Dinah 2. See how I... I wonder if the word European is there or simply Western. For you, as for all disciples at this time of world crisis, life has been exceedingly difficult. This is not a platitudinous truism, in spite of A.B. remarking sub rosa that it was. Uh-huh. He's outing A.A.B. Must have been interesting, the kind of dialogue they had as D.K. was dictating, especially as he was dictating concerning the lives of people in his groups, people whom A.A.B. knew very well. As she said, it was just amazing what he could say about such people and their process. Of course, he saw into the soul. She knows me so well that for years her comments have proved a source of amusement to me, and sometimes have proved most helpful in aiding me to understand the Occidental mind. Here it is. I am an Oriental of the fourth root race, although I have had two European incarnations. Only two. You know, sometimes we say, well, you're going to be born... you're going to be born in all different root races and in all different sub-races, but DK has said that he's had mostly, somewhere else, a series of Oriental incarnations, and that they have been in a masculine body. So I'm going to, although I have had two European incarnations, I'm going to kind of underline that. I still at times fail to grasp or understand the Occidental reaction, but the remark above is not simply fatuous, but contains in it the clue to your future. Your difficulties at this time stem largely from others more than from yourself. They are instructive more than karmic. Interesting. Sometimes when we encounter difficulties, we might think, oh, this is a karmic situation, but maybe we are put in connection with different types of people for the sake of instruction, even though it may be difficult. So maybe, you know, in ancient Greece, or was it Greece? Clinias, the just Greek, as he is called, second in command to Pythagoras. And there's another Neoplatonist with whom the Tibetan is sometimes associated. Now, we cannot confirm this, but Plotinus, not Iamblichus and not Proclus. The three of those names are frequently mentioned in the same breath. Iamblichus, more Master Hilarion, not sure about Proclus, but Plotinus, a great scholar, who wrote, I think, something called the Aeneids. And he had a school for young people where he taught them many things. Obviously a considerable initiate, an initiate of considerable standing. And this was probably after the period when he was Arya Sangha in the Buddhist tradition. Putting the, you know, trying to trace where the Tibetan has been, putting the indications together. I was at the event with the Dalai Lama in 2011. Tuya and I were there with many friends. Some had made it possible for us to attend that, and there was a story about the 17 preceding scholars. 17 of them up to this point, and I was sure that I saw the Tibetan in an earlier incarnation. Maybe he was called Arya Sangha, I'm not sure. He was able to penetrate into the Tushita heaven and hold communion with Lord Maitreya. It's all beginning to sound quite familiar. One day, if it's useful, all of this will be laid out for us so we can examine impartially and instructively how the lines of development have proceeded. But anyway, there are his European incarnations, at least the mention of them. And does that mean that nothing more recent has occurred? I mean, because Cleinias would have been in, you know, somewhere 500 BC, the time Pythagoras and Plotinus. In Neoplatonic times, 3rd or 4th century AD, they are European. And not since then? Maybe not. We don't want to speculate too far here because we could be very wrong, but at least it's a thread of thought that one can follow and one day confirm. So the foundation is already laid, and what I here give can provide another step forward and further light. It might here be stated that until the Antikorana, the bridge of light between the higher and lower minds, between the spiritual triad and the three personalities, is definitely constructed, and usually from the time nearing the second initiation to the fifth initiation. There, at that point, the period, I would say, of retraction. But maybe all the way to the monad, all the way to the sixth, perhaps. Maybe there is some Antikoranic-like energy structure which connects the master to the monad. But when the monad is all in all and has returned from its great pilgrimage, at least that part of it that it has sent forth has returned, then probably there will be no Antikorana into the lower worlds, but a new Antikorana into the still higher worlds for the way of higher evolution will have to be constructed, if the analogy holds good. So that until this bridge of light is being definitely constructed, these sciences will remain obscure to the average intellect. And he's always telling us how average we really are. So maybe we just have to assume that some of these sciences about which he's talking, which he's developing, are still obscure to us. Once, however, the intuition can come into action via the Antikorana, light will gradually begin to pour in. You can understand, you know, how important Mercury, is for the inflowing of intuitive light. A lot of work that people do with Mercury in the concrete mind through reasoning is like that tendril of energy which comes up from the earth and attracts the lightning. As I've said before, I wish I had examined it more clearly when the documentary was on, but I saw it. There was a tendril of energy coming up from the earth, which basically was the invocation of the lightning. So the work we do with reasoning invokes the intuition. That's what I want to say. It doesn't necessarily have to obscure it. Or let's just say careful reasoning invokes intuitive response to complete that which reasoning cannot complete. So from reasoning comes pure reason. So the light on the new science will gradually start to pour in. The world must begin to accept and give weight to the conclusions of its intuitives, and especially if they have a good abstract mind. If they have a good abstract and concrete mind for the sake of explanation. That's the thing, you know, many mystics have made pronouncements and they sound outrageous. They're given in a language which no one can understand unless you've had a similar experience. They have not been interpreted. But Mercury also, with its third ray meaning, is a planet of interpretation, not only a planet of intuition. So the world must begin to give weight to the conclusions of its intuitives. they have ever taken the first needed step in the unfoldment of human consciousness. And you know, many people in the motion picture industry are intuitive and seem to foresee future states for humanity. Hopefully some of them are only possibilities and not destiny, because some are pretty grim. But unless there was the grim, there wouldn't be drama, you know, and humanity has the habit of drama, just like it has the habit of misery. It is the complexity of detail which primarily is responsible for the confusion. The intuition, as the philosopher understands it, is the ability to arrive at knowledge through the activity of some innate sense, apart from the logical or reasoning process. What a fine definition of intuition. And one which, you know, as is my wont, my habit, I would like to I'd like to bring it over here to the AAB extracts, which I'd like you all to have if you want it some fine day. Get rid of that one and save that, and let's just see where we are here, what page we're on. 1, 2, oh, I guess we're on 516 still. So this will be Esoteric Astrology 516 and Intuition Definition. The intuition, as the philosopher understands it, is the ability to arrive at knowledge through the activity of some innate sense apart from the reasoning or logical process. So we'll put that in the AAB extracts, Intuition Definition. I've been collecting these a long time, when I realized that there are so many golden treasures in the Tibetan's work, and that by collecting them and sort of seeing them in relation to each other, arcs of light can unite them meaningfully according to pure reason, according to the actual divine design, according to the actual divine pattern. So this intuition comes into activity when the resources of the lower mind have been used, explored, and exhausted. So it's like this, don't avoid the lower mind in the search for the intuition. And even the abstract mind, as far as that goes, because some of the great thinkers have reasoned in the abstract mind very high and lofty things which have not been blessed by the confirmation of intuition. Then and only then the true intuition begins to function. And he implies by that that there are responses which masquerade as the intuition. The so-called psychic hunch. And he tells us, don't confuse the two. It is the sense of synthesis, the ability to think in wholes and to touch the world of causes. Another great definition of intuition, to be put together with what we find in the beginning of the Glamour World Problem book. There he talks about love, wholeness, universality, things of that nature. The sense of synthesis, the ability to think in wholes and to touch the world of causes. Well, forgive me here, if you will. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 516, and intuition, another definition. Definition. Okay. And that's a little faster. We're right there. All right. So, a sense of synthesis. He tells us that, you know, the candidates for the new schools must have at least this embryonic sense of synthesis. They The schools are meant to transcend the concrete mind. The concrete mind is out of balance with everything else, and the antidote is given in the new school. So this embryonic sense of synthesis must be there in all those who will be accepted to the true new schools. The ability to think in wholes, you know, including many, many relations, and the wholeness in which those relations find themselves, and to touch the world of causes, which only begins with the causal body and goes on up from there through the cosmic ethers. Those are the true worlds of causation. The final world of causes is the logoic plane itself when we are considering the cosmic physical plane, but of course it can't stop there either, can it? When this becomes possible, the investigating astrologer will find that the complexities of the problem will disappear and the details fall into obvious position in such a manner that the sum total will appear in the blinding light of surety. That's a wonderful anticipation, and may that day soon be with us when, surveying a great quantity of bewildering details, the tangle will disappear, the details will fall into their obvious and correct position, and the sum total and its indications will appear in the blinding light of surety. Blinding light of surety. The certainty that goes along with the intuition, real intuition. Because it is the revelation of truth, it's not speculation, it's not what might be, what could be. It is what is. So, another, another great definition, of the intuition. Nope, that is not to be allowed. How intuitive confirmation appears. In what mode? The blinding light of surety. Now, that's not the same thing as being sure of one's opinions, which can simply arise from not having investigated other possibilities. This is an inner intuitive conviction which brings the true knowledge. True knowledge. At present, students cannot see the wood for the trees. As the proverb says, and the proverb is right, these sciences are mutually interpreting, maybe. Is this the correct word? Or do we also mean mutually interpenetrating? Well, let's just say that if we know, let's look at these sciences. If we know certain of them reasonably well, we may be able to shed light on the others. If we mean mutually interpreting, the rays can help us shed light on the other four, the centers on the other four, the triangles on the other four, etc., etc. So maybe the word interpreting is correct. I don't have the actual hard copy of the book in front of me. And but in a way, they also interpenetrate. That's for sure. They're all part of each other. When you think about the great number of words that had to be put down in order to create this book, and the possibility for mistakes existing, maybe it's surprising there are so few. But maybe this is the correct word. During the life cycle of humanity through which we are now passing, and what life cycle is that? The emergence from the fourth to the fifth, the world discipleship, the preparing for the first initiation of humanity, of a certain proportion of humanity, which will mean, in effect, that humanity has taken the first initiation. During the life cycle of humanity through which we are now passing, in relation between the centers and the rays, and therefore between the centers and the planets, it will be found that the centers are governed by the following rays. And so, you know, in other life cycles, of humanity, the governance of the centers by these rays or planets could be different. So everything, the contradictions are due to the changes of energy at different times. And I've referred to this chart so often, haven't I? The head center for the average man, ruled by Pluto, telling us of the cerebral quality of Pluto and its possible relation to the third ray or the first ray, that we know because the head center in a way is number one as well as number seven. So Uranus is there with number seven but also number one. But there's a very strong research quality, so there's a mental quality to Pluto, cerebral mental quality. The absence center by fifth ray Venus, now we discussed this earlier, a sacred planet. Are there any others? Now we were told that even in the case of the undeveloped man, that two centers would be ruled by the sacred planets, the Ajna was not included. I'm trying to remember now. Was it the sacral center and the head center in the case of the undeveloped man? Let's see. Okay, well, no, I was incorrect, but this is the... this is the place. The head center is one of them. Yes. This is back on just a few pages back. I should have remembered that. So in the undeveloped man, the five non-sacred planets control with the head and heart centers under the rule of two sacred planets. Which planets being determined by the ray of the soul and personality? We did indeed discuss this. But it's not the Ajna Center. The Ajna Center was not listed. So when we come back to this point that the Ajna Center and Sacral Center for the average man are both ruled by a sacred planet, we have to wonder why and whether other possibilities could exist. What about the moon? There's a possibility there. And of course, Mercury. But that usually comes later. The throat center by the Earth, we have a third-ray personality on our Earth. The Ajna Center, interestingly enough, is a... what is it? It is the sixth center from above, the second center from... sixth center from below, second from above. Venus has a sixth-ray monad, submonad. Probably a second-ray monad ultimately, so it really fits well from the spirit perspective, six centers from below and two from above. It's major second-ray monad, minor six-ray monad. And of course, it's connected with light, and the most luminous of the ray lords is the fifth-ray lord, just the way the most luminous of the planets, as far as we're concerned, is Venus, whose soul is the fifth ray. It's a good fit. But you kind of wonder whether, for the undeveloped person, other planets might not be involved in the Ajna Center. So many are involved in the Ajna Center. The throat center, well, we have a third ray personality on our Earth, and the fecundity of the productions of the throat center, of the productions of the throat center, are like the fecundity of nature on Earth. So many forms are built and tested and discarded. So many arrangements and rearrangements are here. It's a material center because, interestingly, it has number seven for manifestation is very much there because it's got 16 petals, so the one and the six make the seven, and it is, if you look at head, heart, and throat, is the center of manifestation among those three. But what kind of manifestation? You know, the Earth is not yet a sacred planet, and the forms created on the Earth are not yet archetypal, necessarily. Forms created on the Earth are not yet archetypal. So there are many apparently unnecessary forms, or transitional. And let's just say that the creations of the throat center later will be much more conforming to the inner design, rather than just any old form. You know, some, there's a lot of, you know, fairly unintelligent people that just babble on at the throat center, producing all kinds of forms. But these forms are not necessarily coordinated with that which is planned or should be. They're just forms. And they can be very limiting and circumscribing and oppressive. One can become overwhelmed by one's creations. Well, then the heart center is the sun. Yes, the second ray, of course, second ray soul, second ray personality of our solar logos at this time. And in a way, the sun is the star, you know, and higher than the status of the planetary logo. So, but we could be talking here about, of course, a non-sacred secondary planet veiled by the sun. But when the sun, you know, have sun in your heart, is the old saying. When the sun is really in the heart, and it really is the solar logos, or the heart of the sun, then we have a high stage being reached. So this is not the sun in its highest state, I suppose. Not the sun or solar logos in its highest state. But when the sun as a star rules any center, and in a way you could say it rules them all, then we've reached a high stage of initiation, maybe one in which the solar logos is taking over as a kind of initiator, maybe even beyond that of the planetary logos. The solar plexus, that's pretty straightforward. It's the fifth center down, but it's ruled by the sixth ray. It's the third center up of the major centers, not counting the spleen. And there's a lot of connection between the third and sixth ray, just as between the second and fourth and the first and second. So they're both rays of activity, and Mars is a planet of activity with much sixth ray, and quite a bit of the third, it would seem, as well. So this the lower point of the solar plexus particularly is ruled by Mars, and it is more horizontal desire or low desire. It's not uplifting, aspiring desire. But Mars makes sense there. Of course, in a way, it rules all the subdiaphragmatic centers, closely connected with the sacral center, and it rules Kundalini latent, so it's connected with the base of the spine center. What about the spleen? Not specifically, but it's interesting about energizing. You know, Mars is an energizer, and the prana which comes through the spleen also amounts to a way of energizing the system. So they both share that factor of energizing. We don't find any super diaphragmatic chakras of which Mars is the real ruler, although there is a sense in which the Ajna Center one day expresses a lot of sixth ray, but I think that would be more Neptune than Mars. Then we go on for this other, it's another sacred planet, you know, Uranus at the sacral center. And, you know, surprising in a way, because you would think for the average man, what about Mars or Moon? Well, Venus is sometimes associated, but sometimes we're told that Venus rules sex and sometimes not. It certainly rules that magnetic attraction between the pairs of opposites, which in essence sex is in its manifestation outside the world of dense physical form. So Uranus, you know, to me, I sometimes think that it rules the sacral center when there's about to be a reversal. And does it really rule the sacral center even of early man when it's so, the sacral center is so active in a Martian sort of way? And the creation of form through the sacral center is so prominent in the early races. Does it really do that? But DK puts it here for a reason, and oftentimes there's a very great split that Uranus represents, splitting one thing from another. And of course, through the division of the sexes, we have a split, and two sacral centers equal one heart center. Well, it's kind of a romantic formula. But the six and six of the sacral centers of the partners can maybe stimulate the 12 of the heart center. So there's a possibility. The fact that the sacral center has exactly one half the number of petals as the heart center cannot be by chance. So Uranus to me represents the reversal of the energy which is not so much procreative as self-creative or recreative, and rises to the throat center under, maybe under Saturn, and later under Uranus itself. The home of the mental elemental, we're told the sacral center is, where the solar plexus, the home of the astral elemental, and the base of the spine, I suppose, has much to do with the physical etheric elemental. Usually the base of the spine is connected with the ethers, and the sacral center most with the dense physical. But interestingly enough, the home of the mental elemental, and I wonder if it's possible to trace that down. Looks like there's only going to be one. So there it is, the sacral center, the mental elemental life. This is Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. Transferred later to the throat, the solar plexus center, the astral elemental life, transferred later to the heart center, the base of the spine center, the physical elemental life, transferred later to the head center. There it is. So that is an Esoteric Psychology 2, page 304. And I, you know, like to put this in here. Now, isn't it interesting that the sacral center deals with the mental elemental, which is in a way the third of the elementals, not the fourth, the third. And ruled by the third ray. So we see again that the sacral center has much of the third ray producing form. It makes sense. I'll just make this smaller, you know. The mental elemental life. Now the physical elemental life, I suppose, in one way includes the etheric aspect, but in another way it doesn't. The etheric seems to stand alone. Sometimes we're told about the physical elemental, and it seems to include only the lower three sub-levels, and that the etheric body is actually more related to the soul. So, in the head center, the mental consciousness is there, the throat center, the creative consciousness, involving the mental elemental, and the heart center, the feeling consciousness. There's always a connection between the first and third ray. The first ray, well, the head center is connected with will, but also with mind. And sometimes when we're talking about the mind, we say, now, you mind me, which means obey my will. There's an interchange between the three and the one, but not so much with the heart center, solar plexus. Pretty well, the attractive magnetic factor is there, the second aspect. So, let's see here. All right. At the base of the spine, repeating Pluto, interestingly enough, a sacred, non-sacred planet. Although, which we say, whoopsie, that won't do. Right. We have to say that it's esoteric planet, but non-sacred. Esoteric, but non-sacred. So there must be a very close relation between Pluto and Pluto, between the Sun and Mars, right? Sun ruling the heart center and Mars, although with the average person, you're not really going to get that kind of transfer. But with the disciple, if you have a Sun-Mars aspect and it's reinforced by Neptune-Jupiter aspects, the transference to the heart center may be underway. We cannot ignore the non-sacred planets or those rulers, secondary rulers, because they are, as it were, absorbed by the higher ruler. And we have Earth and Uranus, and there's a big mythology about Earth and Uranus. Interestingly, of course, you would expect, is there a reversal here, I want to ask? Oh, I'm doing it again, am I not? It just occurs to me, is there a reversal? Because Uranus is greater by far than Earth. And Uranus has an intimate relation with Earth in mythology. And both have first ray monads. So, in a way, there's this myth concerning Uranus, Saturn, and the Earth, and Venus as well. And probably ultimately it has to do with the transformation of eternity into time. But they're all related. And I wonder, you know, could it be, in some way, that Earth is really the one of the rulers of the sacral center? Because of its fecundity in producing forms. Physical forms. Now, there is, you know, it seems very logical to me that it could be, and that since the seventh ray does at a certain point in evolution rule the throat center, we're really trying to elevate the kind of indiscriminate procreativity of the sacral center, which doesn't sound very Uranian to me. It sounds so Tellurian in a way, it sounds so Earth-like, up to archetypal creativity of the throat center. So if they were reversed, we would have indiscriminate procreativity, elevated to discriminating archetypal creativity under Uranus. Sometimes I've thought, you know, that a number of planets play their role in the solar system in relation to the chakras of our solar logos. We know the very strong hints that Earth is or one day will be fully the base of the spine center of the solar logos. But its symbolic connection with the mental unit, with Venus being the monastic permanent atom, is very strong. The idea that it is a source of prana connects it very strongly with the spleen center, two types of prana found in connection with the spleen, the solar prana and the earth prana, and the fact of the great production of forms under the third ray on our planet suggests a connection with the sacral center. Like I've said, there are triangles in revolution, and at different times, different planets may play that particular function. We looked at that early as we began this section, and I'm not, as always, getting lost a little bit here, but the idea was that there were different functions of the planets at different times. In other words, that a chakra could be ruled by different planets at different times. That's the essence of it, and I think basically he said that. So I'm going to put that down here, that a chakra can be ruled by different planets at different times. For instance, head center, for instance. Okay. All right. Getting beyond the technicalities. For instance, head center. Pluto first. Vulcan next. Uranus following. At different times. And who knows, maybe the sun at some point. And there could even be a Saturnian connection there. You know, when you look at the Shambhala connection to Leo and to the Great Bear. So here are three planets which at different times can rule or largely influence, dominate, be the major influence of the head center of the disciple. The Uranus rulership is definitely at the initiatic stage, and the disciple's Vulcan. So if this is the case, is it possible that there can be triangles of revolution within the solar system, any one of which, or all three of which, are connected with a particular center, and one of which at any one time is the dominating influence of that center? Now, if we think, one planet, one chakra, okay. But if we think of shifting functions, like, you know, there's so much to indicate that Venus is connected with this solar plexus of our solar logos. But there's a statement about its role as the heart center. Whereas Jupiter is assigned to the heart center of the human being, of the advanced human being, and who knows, maybe Neptune of a much more advanced human being, there'll be a time when Jupiter rises in its function. So in any organization, people rise, they analogously, they undertake different functions. The role of manager, vice president, president, okay. You move upward through the ranks. The same entity moves upward through the ranks, but the role or function stays the same. Well, the chakric function might stay the same, but different entities might occupy it at different times. And I'm pretty sure that that is the way it happens. Just the way different planets can influence a human chakra at different times. It may be that different planets in a triangle of revolution can uphold a chakric function at different times. Now, maybe seeming a little speculative, and one might wonder what kind of proof one has, but when you just think about three planets connected with the base of the spine, in the human being, or more, Pluto, Mars, Mercury. And when does each one of them, is each one of them of real influence? Is there a specifically Plutonic period, Martian period, or Mercurian period as Kundalini is rising? There's some mysteries here. And I don't think we should be overly rigid in assigning one planet per chakra forever, because a planet is an evolving entity, And a chakric position is a function within a being. So it's possible for different beings to undertake different functions as they rise in their evolutionary status. As Venus is part of the lower quaternary of our solar logos, we might wonder whether Venus can be the heart center at this time, unless we exclude the spleen from the lower quaternary. Usually, the quaternary would have to do with the, not so much with the heart center, but with the subdiaphragmatic centers, three major and the spleen. But maybe there'll come a time when Venus is not part of the lower quaternary. Of course, unless you count the heart as part of the quaternary. So, maybe there's an analogy for that too, because our sun is part of the lower quaternary of a cosmic logos, and maybe Sirius is not, but the sun is as a heart center. All right, well, that has to be researched. But there is a kind of quaternary, subdiaphragmatic quaternary, of which Venus may not be a part in the human being anyway. Venus has a more elevated position, at least in the human being. It's not particularly a planet of the personality, although obviously any energy can have a personality type of expression. So anyway, we have two Plutos, which where Vulcan will step in the head center area for Pluto when we discuss disciples and initiates. But there are still higher initiates where Uranus can rule the head center, and Mercury, with its fourth ray meaning, can rule the ajna center. So I would have to ask initiates of what degree. Now, these are all going to be sacred planets for initiates. The head center ruled by Vulcan, and as I've often said, I think this has to do especially with the seven head centers in the region of the head. Now, maybe the highest head center can exert its influence through Vulcan, or Vulcan can stimulate that head center. But certainly, just as the seven stars of the Great Bear are seven head centers and the one about whom naught may be said, so Vulcan, I think, a planet of the will, just the way the Great Bear is a constellation of the will, represents the seven within the head or above the head. As I said, there's ambiguity there. Are there seven within the head, seven above the head, or both, possibly? The Ajna Center does not change. It stays for the initiate the fifth ray. But if I could attempt to look here, we will see that Mercury, see if this is the one I want. The throat center is ruled by Saturn, just as the two head centers are ruled by Uranus, ruling the head center, and Mercury ruling the ajna center. That's a very definite statement. In Esoteric Healing, page 151, this is only true where disciple is concerned. The rulership changes after the third initiation or before the first. These three planets constitute a most interesting triangle of forces, and in the following triplicities and their inevitable interrelations, you have, again, only in the case of disciples, a most amazing picture or story symbolic of ninefold initiation. Head center, ajna center, throat center, third eye, right eye under Mercury, left eye under Saturn, pineal gland, pituitary, and carotid gland. The Saturn is often connected with the base of the spine, but also with the base of the skull. And bringing in the third ray, it connects with the carotid gland, which is a third ray center, in this case leaving second ray to the asana center and first ray to the head center. But now this is in the case of disciples. And here we have the idea that disciples and initiates have these particular planets found. He doesn't mention the word initiates, and yet I have the feeling that the third initiation is involved. The rulership changes from what to what after the third initiation or before the first. And if he includes here disciples, we're not necessarily at the third initiation, so the rulership can change. And let's just say rulership can change. We have to take into consideration esoteric healing 151, where Uranus, Mercury, and Saturn are interrelated in terms of the three aspects and the three head centers. In a way, the Alta Major Center is quite esoteric, and when it comes into incarnation, will represent the rising of the past, ruled by Saturn and the third ray. Maybe when Saturn is in Scorpio awakening memory, and third ray being the Lord of memory, and its planet being Saturn, we will have the confrontation with the past. We will have the karma of the past rising up, having to be faced. And we have just such a time now. I don't know when this will be listened to. Maybe soon, maybe 10 or 20 years from now, who knows. But Saturn is in Scorpio now. Scorpio, a triple sign having to do with the third aspect as well as the second and first, and Saturn being the preeminent third aspect planet, the memory. So anyway, Vulcan is here, but I don't think, you know, I think one day, in my view, Uranus may be a more powerful planet in relation to the head center. And maybe the three synthesizing planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, can be assigned to the entire head center, the Ajna center, and the Alta Major center, respectively. Maybe there comes a time when the synthesizing rule later. With Vulcan related to the heart of the sun, because its monadic energy would be expressing to the heart of the sun. So you'd have all those planets in the head. All in the head. You'd have Uranus, Neptune, Saturn, and Vulcan. In a way, substituting for the sun. Or perhaps, you know, Neptune representing the Ajna, but also Neptune, the 12 petals of the heart and head center, and Vulcan, the jewel in that center, and perhaps the jewel in all centers. There's the line of will that can reach through all centers via the jewel that is found. In each case, is it a jewel of seven facets? Vulcan Pleiades and the sevenness of the jewels might be possible. Vulcan will connect with the number seven, with seven as the mineral kingdom is the seventh from a certain perspective. All these things are interrelated, Taurus being assigned deeply connected with the mineral kingdom and with maybe jewels of rare quality. We have to account for the major sources of rulership of any aspect in the human energy system. And we have certain planets with which we are familiar. We have the sacreds and the synthesizing, and we will have many other planets later, more than 115, we're told, to augment our detailed analysis of the rulerships of all the various factors. But right now we're dealing with the essential matters. And I see all of these, and you know, all in the head, and one day, maybe, even Jupiter, who rules Mount Olympus, the head. So Jupiter is also connected with the 12, as is Neptune, both rulers of Pisces, the 12th sign. And in the healing formula, you know, for the second ray, the 12 within the body, 12 within the vehicle, the 12 within the head, and the 12 upon the plane of soul endeavor, cooperate as one. Two energies achieve this consummation, and the three whose number is a 12 respond to the greater 12, the monad itself, which Jupiter rules as the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, the ruler of that plane on which the monad prevails. So by numerical resonance, similarity, we can draw many lines of effective connection, causal connection, and many lines simply of influence. The Agnus Center, so again, you know, it's Venus, but Mercury, perhaps, after the third initiation. It's hard to know how to read that section here. Just as the two head centers are ruled respectfully by Uranus ruling the head center and Mercury ruling the Ajna center, this is only where the disciple is concerned. The rulership changes after the third initiation or before the first. So what does it change to? Because he's told us very definitely on page 517 that the disciple has the following centers, and we're looking at them, and then he gives a rather rare look at Uranus and Mercury, and Uranus is such a high planet, much higher than Vulcan, much higher than Vulcan. Okay, I see that I've been going on here. When I look at the time elapsed, I realize that this should be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 133B, page, I suppose, 517. End. Okay. 517. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Dimension number 133C, page 517.